Today I have the subject, how to achieve material and spiritual success. And it's a very important thing to understand. I was mentioning yesterday the question of the definition of success. Many people think that success means only producing some particular work. But I was questioning, for example, Michelangelo, and whether he was really all that successful. Obviously, as a painter, he was successful, but he became a painter at the expense of his humanity. He wasn't able to relate to people because he was always relating to statues. And he became very sort of almost totally absorbed, fanatical in his work. And I think his work itself suffered because of that, even though he was so great. Nevertheless, it lacks calmness, it lacks grace, it lacks a spiritual beauty. There's a lot of power there. And when I see particularly the statue like the David, it's a fantastic statue. There's no putting it down as art. But still, in much of his work, I'm thinking particularly of the Last Judgment, so much of it is a reflection of a rather tortured spirit. It doesn't have the spiritual grace, for example, of Leonardo. And it seems almost presumptuous to talk about these people, but I have a point that I want to make that I think does apply to every one of us. When you look at pictures in a book, it never really does it. For instance, pictures of the David, don't do it. When you see it, it's just 100 times more magnificent. The Taj Mahal, you see it in pictures, and it doesn't do that much for you. It looks like a pretty little picture. But you get there and see it, and it's something amazing. The same thing with Leonardo's paintings. When I saw the Mona Lisa at the Louvre recently, I was just amazed, overwhelmed at the spiritual magnetism of that painting. You don't see it when you see reproductions, even though the reproductions are faithful. I don't know why that is. I'd almost like to come up with some sort of mystical explanation, such as that the painting's alive, and this is only a photograph of it that you see in a book. It doesn't make sense, obviously, and yet there seems to be something like that to it. When you see the St. John the Baptist there, or is it John the Evangelist? I think it's the Baptist, but I'm not sure. Again, it's in the Louvre in the same room. And that's an inspiring picture. I've seen it many times in books, and it's been sort of pleasant, and I hastily went on to the next one. Or perhaps not hastily, but it didn't do that much for me. But when I saw it there, I immediately wanted to meditate. There was a tremendous power there. When I saw the Last Judgment in the Vatican, I felt overwhelmed by it, but I didn't feel inspired by it. There was anger and torment, and in fact, literally torment, because he's got most of his energy directed toward the poor damned. Even God is sort of like this. About to hurl his anathema at them for eternity. And I wonder what we mean when we speak of success. The world looks at something great that man has done, and the world gasps in amazement and thinks that is success. But real success must be understood, at least by devotees, in terms of our own growth. Everything that we do should be a means of helping us to come closer to reality. If we talk of success, we must talk of the spiritual side of it and of our soul's journey through delusion until it finds fulfillment in God. And any step in the right direction toward that fulfillment is an aspect of success. Any step away from that fulfillment is the opposite. What we have to realize is that in everything that we do, we must be our own greatest masterpiece. If what we are doing outwardly helps to make us that, then it's a good thing. But don't worry about what people think. Think about what God thinks. As it says in the scriptures, that if even all the gods praise you and your guru doesn't and isn't satisfied, then you are out of tune with God. Because the guru is your link with God. The guru is the one you have to please. Not all the canons in the scriptures. this particular channel is the one God has sent to you for your own growth. I remember also when Shubhla Lakshmi, who is perhaps still, certainly was a very well-known singer in India. She's well-known, I don't know if she's still living or not, but she was very popular. And Devi Mukherjee from Bengal played, or asked Master, mentioned to Master, about how wonderfully she sang the part of Meera in the poem Meera. And Master didn't have anything complimentary to say, because he felt that she was singing well, yes, but without the attunement with God that those songs were speaking of. She was a worldly woman. He said you could hear the worldliness in the tone of her voice, which in fact you can. And that movie on the life of Meera has this rather fatuous lady come out and talk about how Shubhla Lakshmi is Meera, but this is just pure fantasy. You can hear in the tone of voice. A person can sing a song. I was noticing this in listening to the St. Matthew Passion. There was a melody there that was absolutely exquisite when the instruments were playing it. But as soon as the soloist came on, even though the soloist was singing the same melody, somehow it deadened the whole rendition, because she was not singing as a devotee. She was singing as a singer. Well, success should have been directed first toward the consciousness of success in what she was trying to do, should have been directed first toward not what can I do to produce a beautiful song so everybody will be impressed that I'm a good musician. It should have been directed toward what can I do to make myself more exalted. In Oberammergau, the Passion play, the person who plays the part of Christ tries to live a Christ-like life during the year that they put it on, at least. And it's a very important thing that we understand that the instrument is more important than the product. That everything that you do is a means of helping you to evolve. And if you can't help yourself, then how are you really going to help others? You can bring out beautiful forms, but it isn't going to inspire and uplift. Moreover, the effect that will be had on them isn't so important, because in this sense I should say it, because if it's their karma to be helped, they'll be helped in some way. They may not see your beautiful painting, but they may get that inspiration through seeing a bird fly in the sky, or hearing a beautiful melody in the brook, or something. All that comes to us comes because it's to come, because we draw it. And so really, the biggest thing that you need to see in working on anything is that you are the most important end product. And this is the mistake that most people make when they get into the whole thought of success. They think in terms of succeeding at one particular thing and don't see the overall picture. A man will enter into a business and drive himself to make a success of this business and starve every other aspect of his nature so that it becomes unloving, unbending, incapable of seeing anybody else, anybody else's needs, anybody else's hungers, becomes a hard person, and his whole life becomes identified and defined in terms of something that he isn't at all. It would be very easy to say that what we have to do is not give ourselves totally to a work. But that's taking it too far. The truth is, and it's a very subtle thing, the truth is that in some people's lives, giving oneself wholly to something, even though it temporarily makes him unbalanced, may be necessary for teaching him a particular lesson, for helping him to grow in a certain way. It's very difficult to make a blanket statement as to what success consists of if you think of it in the specific. Because sometimes, for example, a soldier who loses his life in the defense of his country will receive a very high state of existence in the other world, just because of his courage to even be able to sacrifice his body for a good cause. People who have given up their lives as martyrs have certainly, if they've done it willingly rather than tearfully, they have certainly attracted a very high state after death and also a high life in the next lifetime. And it might look to the worldly person as fanaticism. The worldly person would say, well, but if you go all only in that direction to the extent that you give up your life, then where is the balance? If you were perhaps to compromise your ideals a little bit and live, then you'd be able to accomplish so much more. But in fact, in that one single act might be their salvation. And so we still have to see that the benefit of it was what it did for them, the courage that they expressed. Sometimes that businessman who lives in a one-sided way, it may be right for him because he's developing qualities that he needs to develop. He's developing willpower and he's developing steadfastness. I remember a story of Ramakrishna's, of a farmer who was working. They have this system in India that water will only flow for a certain time into certain fields. And so while it's flowing, they have to be out there in the field getting the water to come into the garden, into the crops, and opening up all the channels in their field so it can have the most far-reaching effect. And two farmers were hastily trying to do everything they could, working very hard, working themselves to exhaustion. And the wife of both of them came out and said that it was supper time. And one of them said, oh, well, I know I should stay here, but after all, what can I do? She's asked me to come. So he went in and had supper. And the other one said, leave me alone, woman, I've got this work to finish. And he was the one who was able to save his crops, but the other one didn't. And Ramakrishna was saying from that there are times when you just can't allow convention and other people's demands of you and conveniences and even such a matter of balance as eating right and so on. You can't allow those things to stand in your way because you've got to do something. And if you don't, it spells total disaster. Well, we've got somehow to tread a fine line. That's why the spiritual path Yogananda described as being like running a race at top speed and performing stunts along the way. It would be very easy to say, oh, don't be a fanatical, don't devote yourself only one-sidedly toward something. But in fact, sometimes you have to. And sometimes real success, even spiritual success, comes to those who do. What we have to understand basically is that whatever we do, our success is to be understood in terms of what it does for us. If it makes us unbalanced, if it starves our total nature to no purpose at all, if the qualities that are being developed in the process, for example, of becoming a businessman and a business tycoon perhaps, if the qualities that these develops are unspiritual and harm our true reason for being in this human body, which is only to know God, then we may say that that is not success. But if it's developing qualities that we do need and that will help us, then we can see that as success. The important thing, however, is to understand that success is something that all of us need. We hear about some people, men generally seem to be doers and women seem to be more there to enjoy, to be. And you find people being on both sides and finally have to learn to be balanced so that they're equally both, that they can enjoy doing a thing, but they can also enjoy the product of the thing. And but I remember this one woman who was told by someone that her lot in this life was to be. And some other woman's comment about her was, and so that's all she does, is just sit there and just is. And this isn't what we mean when we speak of being. We mean being with joy. We mean enjoying, flowing in that joy. This is something, a very vital gift that people can give to each other if they have that gift within themselves. But to think that either can exist really without the other is to misunderstand and miss the whole boat. Each one has to be balanced with the other. Real success is a very high thing. It's not something that you just drift into. Real success it demands every ounce of your attention and every ounce of your awareness. When I speak of not being fanatical, I don't mean to pull back and do nothing as an alternative. I mean to give equal energy to other aspects of your life. And this is our trouble as human beings, that we have a tendency to go too much in one direction or another. We need to balance it. That's why it's such a good thing in this age that we find that balance coming out between men and women, that they are taking over each other's roles and helping themselves to learn how men are learning how to become more appreciative, more loving, more serviceful. And what they have to learn to do is to do it in their way, because they'll never be able to do it as well as women do in their way. And women are learning how to be more aggressive, more outgoing, more active, and yet they have to learn to do it in a feminine way. And they'll never be able to do it as well as men do if they try to do it in a masculine way. We need to balance these two until finally we discover that in fact we are not different from each other at all. We're all souls. There isn't any difference, really. You can be a man in one life and a woman in another life, and you are really neither. You are a soul that has essentially no sex at all. It probably does have, however, polarity, either positive or negative. Negative not in the bad sense, negative in the receiving sense as opposed to the outward sort of thrusting, outgoing sense. And these two do seem to be sort of basic to people's nature, below the whole question of sex. And each one, paired off with the other, brings about that balance which creates the fusion that unites the soul with God. Success must be understood then in terms of doing in a way to improve your being, and being as a means of casting light on your doing. Each one serves the other. Each one without the other can't accomplish anything in the right way. If you have an understanding of success as being finally to be, as we have in this song here on the channels, an open channel for the divine, so that you realize that you aren't there anymore, it's just God flowing through you in whatever way He chooses to act, then you have achieved complete success in your doing and in your being. Ultimately, our being needs to get away from the thought of who I am as a human being, or what I am as my human nature dictates, that I'm such and such a person. Asha was talking about a group of people in this area who were getting together. She was at their gathering, and they were so strongly into this self-definition of I'm a man or I'm a woman, or that they were totally hypnotized by this limitation. What we need to do is understand where we are, so that we can break out of that limitation. If we ignore it, if we deny it, then it's not going to be possible to break out of it. But in all cases, it's necessary that we do break out of it and understand that we are neither, that we are really just the soul. So we need to get away from that sense of success as defining who we are. I had an interesting conversation with somebody in the city a few years ago. It was at the time that Richard Baker was being installed as the priest of the Zen temple there. And some lady there was talking with me, and I forget how the conversation went, but anyway, at any rate, at one point she asked me my name, and I told her I was Swami Kriyananda, and she says, "Oh, but you're famous." And I said, "Well, okay, but why but?" And she said, "Well, you don't seem famous." And I said, "Well, what do you mean by that?" I just was wondering what she meant by that. And so she said, "Well, all the other famous people I've met seem important." Well, I felt she might have put it more tactfully, but what she was really trying to say was they seem self-important. They've defined themselves in terms of, oh, I'm famous, therefore I'm important, therefore I'm great, and they look like stuffed shirts. And their success has in fact become their prison. And I took it as a great compliment, actually, that she could just think of me as an ordinary person. Because our success should not change us. Our success should not define us. We simply are as we are. We came naked into this world, and we leave this world naked and alone. And everything that we've accomplished is left behind us. All that we take with us is whatever energy and characteristics we have managed to develop in the process. So while you're looking for success, don't allow that success to become you. You have done something, and you've done it well enough, but the real purpose in doing a thing well is usually so you can leave it. As I've often said, I'd like to think that these great artists and composers and so on, having reached the top of their little heap, have decided, well, they've done that, and they'll go out and do something else, maybe be scientists, or politicians, or writers, or hunters, or who knows what. But each one can only go so far in his particular direction. I know one woman who was a great artist, and then in this lifetime was not interested in being an artist anymore, because she'd already achieved that. So success, to a large extent, is also to be understood in terms of fulfilling a particular thought, a desire, an impulse, getting it out of your way so you can go on and do something else, so you can be free, finally, from all desires. That has a lot to do with it right there. If you act for God, if you act with the desire to please Him, to serve Him, to give Him the fruits of whatever you're doing, remember that success in the eyes of others, which is what people usually consider success, isn't really success at all. There are many people who have reached the top of whatever they're doing and are failures as a result, because it's made them less human. But there are other people who never are noticed by anybody who are successes, because what they're trying to do is being done well. I'm reminded in that case of Horace Gray. I've told the story about him in the past. When James Collar was giving a lecture, he'd never lectured before, and he was very nervous, and he told the story himself. I'm sure he exaggerated a little bit, but it was a hilarious story. His first lecture, he was going to give a series of classes in Phoenix, and so he gave an introductory lecture. The subject was what yoga can do for you. And he got up, he was so nervous. Master had said, well, if you're too nervous, maybe it would help you to take a hot bath to sort of calm down. Well, he took a hot bath. It was so hot, and he took it for so long that it completely drained him of all magnetism. And he came out there in front of the public, limp as a towel, and somehow managed to say everything he could possibly think of to say on the subject within 5 minutes. And then then he asked that the collection be taken to help pay for the cost of the hall. And the man that he had there helping him was this Horace Gray, who was spastic. And so Horace Gray was staggering from row to row after this lecture on what yoga can do for you, passing the basket, hanging onto the chair for dear life. People got up and walked out and didn't say a word. Well, anyway, this Horace Gray, Master one time said that God is pleased with his devotion. He will find God in this lifetime. And James himself, possibly remembering that episode, sort of was stunned. And he said, well, it must be a very simple kind of devotion, isn't it, sir? And that was the highest compliment he could sort of imagine. And Master smiled blissfully, and he said, ah, that is the kind that pleases God. Success doesn't mean being successful necessarily in the eyes of others. Success means being successful in the eyes of God. Success means doing a thing right by your own conscience, and doing a thing in such a way as to develop your own inner nature. And the plaudits of the multitude, these don't really mean anything at all. Almost always the multitude applauds something that they don't even know. They'll applaud the pretty face of the actress, but they won't know anything about her private life. And if they start hearing, they try to pretend they don't know, because they don't want to hear about it. They're projecting their own images. They're not seeing what's really there. Moreover, you can just remind yourself, if ever you get the inclination to become famous, that in fact the majority of people are always wrong. And even the minority are usually wrong. And so what does it matter what they think? You might, even if they think well of you, feel that this is the first time, now at last you've got something to worry about. Because if they're if they're always wrong, then why in heaven's name should they be right this time? Be satisfied if your conscience is satisfied. Be satisfied if you feel that God is smiling in your own heart. Master wrote, when Arjuna was praying to Krishna and Krishna appeared to him smiling, as if smiling. And Master wrote that a person has to be very highly advanced before he will see God's smile, before he will feel God really smiling at him in his heart. His approval, in other words, he feels his approval. So work for that. That's worth working for. Because when you have that, then you know that nothing else matters. You know that everybody can be against you, and who cares? Sri Yukteswar used to train Master in that thought because he knew that he had a very heavy duty here, and he knew that he'd have a great deal of opposition and many people not understanding what he was trying to do. After all, here was this Hindu yogi seeming heathen to many Christians, coming and teaching and getting a very large following. And naturally, he had a lot of enemies, of self-styled enemies at least, in the religious community, people who were jealous of his spiritual success and used to say that, well, it must be of the devil. Same thing as what happened with Jesus Christ. And Master told me about a time when they were up on a balcony or something, a dais in front of maybe 5,000 people. And Sri Yukteswar asked Master to get up and get something, and Master just sort of turned the corner of the rug over as he walked. He didn't watch where he was going. And Sri Yukteswar, to train him, it wasn't meanness on his part, but he said, "Look where you're going, you oaf," like this. And everybody laughed, and Master said, I looked at them, and I knew that not one of them had what I had. But it didn't matter, and Sri Yukteswar was trying to make Master free of any dependence upon what other people thought and cared. Success doesn't mean success in other people's eyes. It means success in your eyes. How do you feel inside? The opinions of other people don't really matter. Truth matters. And if they happen to be right, then that's wonderful. But let truth stand by itself. As we sang in this song earlier, walk like a man, even though you walk alone. Why court approval once the road is known? If you know where you've got to go, you don't have to have other people agree with you. Let come who will, but if they all stay home, the goal still awaits you. Go on alone. So be happy if others join you. Be thrilled if everybody realizes that this is what they're seeking and this is what is right for them too. But if they don't, then don't worry about it. Just if you have to go alone, be content, because the goal is still the thing that counts. So I want to define success in this way before we proceed to discuss how to achieve it, because unless we understand that, we're going to be going off into bypaths. They won't be helpful to us. After we understand that the goal of success is really what it does for us, nevertheless, we have to realize that still, whatever we're trying to do, if we're going to do it, we might as well do it to the very best of our ability. I have found this to be so in writing, for example, that I'll reach a point where everybody else thinks that it's fine. And still, I'm not satisfied. If I'm not satisfied, I mean I'm not satisfied just because they are. The temptation is always there that, my God, I've worked on it so hard already. I usually go over something 50 times before I'm satisfied. And that's twice what most writers do, and much more than what most writers do, and twice what some of them do who boast about how many times they go over a thing. But if I feel there's one comma out of place, I'm not satisfied. And there comes a point, finally, where the returns are diminishing. It ceases to be worth it. Because a lot of work, just to find one comma, it's useless. But up to a certain point, before that point of diminishing returns, I found that that there is a point where nobody else could tell the difference. If I do it this way or that way, I can tell the difference because it's my thing and therefore I'm more in tune with it. And the fact that I can tell the difference is what's important to me. And it's very meaningful to me, even though others sort of scold me because they say you're staying up too late and you're working too hard. But I feel that if I'm going to do a thing, I should do it as well as I possibly can. And the alternative is just not to do it. I don't like half-baked products. And I get impatient when I read a book where the writer hasn't done the work for us. He makes us try to figure out what he's really talking about. There's one classic sentence in a book by Dane Rudyard that I still don't know what it means. He's got all these long words and all put together, and you sort of are staggered by the depth of it because you don't know what it's all about. And you get deeper and deeper into it, and you find that it's getting murkier and murkier. We need to try to put a thing as simply, as clearly, as well, as beautifully, as rightly as we possibly can. And each thing is a thing in itself. You can't say that because it had that one had to be done that way, this has to be done that way too. That's another trap that people fall into. For example, picture windows. This is something that amused me years ago. People began to discover that they're a good thing because you can see so much beautiful scenery through a picture window. The whole of nature becomes, in a sense, a picture on your wall, although what you're really doing is looking through the window at nature. So picture windows became in. And the next thing you found was that architects were putting picture windows on the dusty, newspaper wind-blown streets of San Francisco, where there's nothing to look at except newspapers blowing here and there, and trolley cars passing by. And a ridiculous thing, but people stop thinking. They think, oh, this is in now, so this is what we're doing. Why is it in? Where is it in? Who put it in? We have to think everything through for itself. We have to sort of withdraw from it and judge it for itself, and then when we are committed to doing it, then do it as well as we possibly can. And the big thing that is learned when we do that isn't that we've done a good job. It's that we've overcome something in ourselves. We've overcome laziness, maybe, resistance to doing a thing as conscientiously as we can. I find that in most things, people will bring a thing up to a certain level, and then they'll think, oh, that's enough, I can't think any further. Laziness, that's all. Just plain laziness. If you put out the energy to do it as well as you can, what you're really doing is finally reaching a new level of energy in yourself. So success means to do a thing as well as you possibly can, and that's usually about 10 times better than you thought you could. What is real success? I mean, how do we achieve real success? We achieve it on the basis of certain particular attitudes of mind, certain particular qualities that are needed in order to achieve it. Concentration is the very key to success. You'll find that nobody drifts absent-mindedly into success. Sometimes people will be caught up into it because of certainly because of all the activities of former lives. That it looks easy, but we don't see all the work that went before it. It looks like sheer luck, for example, that somebody's singing in his window and some great conductor hears her and takes her on, and she becomes overnight a great sensation. Seems like sheer luck. But in fact, she's probably worked at that luck for incarnations. It seems like some people, without any effort, go to the very top. There are many, many success stories like that. But who sees what's going on behind the scenes? They had to put the energy out for that to be accomplished. You will also find that nobody ever achieves success unless he has a lot of concentration. You see some of these comedians and people whose roles seem very light in life. Maybe they're actors, maybe they're singers, maybe they're who knows what. But you will always find, for instance, there was one golfer, I forget his name now. He was Mexican, I think. But, yeah, that's the one. I think that's the one. He was very jolly, wasn't he? Is he, I mean? Yeah, that's the one. Okay. People would tend to think that he's just having fun, but that man's really serious about what he's doing. When he's out there, he's really concentrated. Cassius Clay, the same thing. Muhammad Ali would sort of make all these jokes and seem to be very light about it, but he was in dead earnest about what he was doing. This was just a game that he was putting on for fun. But nobody can really do well at something who isn't really serious. These comedians are basically very serious people. In fact, if one were to take it a step further, one would say to our surprise that they often turn out to be quite gloomy people. It seems as if their commitment to one particular side or the crest of the wave of a particular emotion means that they are more than usually susceptible to the trough of the wave also. These opposites always play off against each other. But you will find that people do not succeed really without a lot of power of success, without a lot of power of concentration. And if you want to succeed, that's the first thing you need to develop. You need to be able to put your mind on one thing and just keep it absolutely there. Napoleon was so absolutely concentrated. There was one time he was writing a battle directive, and it was in the midst of battle, and a cannonball fell right at his feet in the sand. And instead of jumping up like this, as many people would do, he held his paper out there for the sand to spray on the ink and dry it. The successful people don't get there by accident. They get there because they have that power of concentration. When you're doing one thing, don't do other things too. Do nothing but that. Get into the habit of doing one thing at a time with all your attention. And while you're doing that, then don't let anything take your mind away from it. People will come and try to distract you from it. Leave me alone. I'm doing this. You'll find you can do a lot more that way. Because you get it done, and then you can go on to the other and get that done well. In fact, what you'll discover is that you can do each thing far better than if you try to do all of them at once. Many people will say, well, you don't want to be a fanatic. You want to, why just do one thing? Try to do my thing too, is what they're usually trying to say. And I've just had to spend this whole last week dealing with a problem of that sort. These people who have been trying to get me to do their thing, and I've got to help them to see that I've got to do this thing, and then I've got to be able to do that thing within this context. I can't just be dumping this and going off and doing that. I wouldn't do anything right if I did that. And they have to be brought to a point where they can understand it, and how to get through to them was what I've devoted this whole week to. It's a very important thing to understand. The importance of concentration. How to develop concentration? Well, yoga is one of the best things of all. By the practice of the Hong Sao technique, which is a technique of concentration, what you're learning to do is just keep your mind focused on one thing. Keep your mind centered on that, and then very centered in yourself also. Getting very, very, very calm. So it's not a technique of concentration like gazing at one thing outside yourself. It's really gazing at a part of yourself, the physical part of yourself, and as you gaze at that, you're more and more aware of your own inner freedom from the breath, your own inner freedom from the body. It's a wonderful technique, and probably the highest technique of yoga for developing the power of concentration. What is concentration? Well, it's quite simply the ability to take the mind from all objects of distraction and keep it on one thing at a time. You don't have to think about a thing necessarily. Actually, you'll find that in the deeper stages of concentration, clarity of vision becomes much, much greater. The deeper stages of concentration, you're not thinking. You're simply aware. In the lower stages, you're trying to weigh all the pros and cons of a situation and trying to decide whether you should do it this way or that way, trying to see all the various alternative ways in which you might be able to do it, and from that, coming to your conclusion. But in this deeper way, you don't really try to think at all. I've observed this. It's an interesting thing that I've shared with some of you before, and that is that in counseling people, I've observed quite frequently that somebody will ask me a question to which I don't know the answer, and I'm perfectly frank to say so if I don't know. But what has astonished me is that in the very act of saying I don't know, suddenly I do know. That when I was reaching out for it, I couldn't get it. And when I quit thinking and just said, well, I don't know, and gave it up to God, because in saying I don't know, I don't say it in this hopeless thought, but God, I've tried, it's now your problem, and I just give it to him and say, I'm sorry, I can't do anything. Suddenly then he can do something. It's really interesting how when the mind is still, the answers do begin to come. So that stillness of mind is the state of concentration. I've often thought of people who have too much physical awareness. When they concentrate like this, and there's a lot of strain and tension, and no, you know, like this. And they get more and more sort of uptight about it all. And I would see Master, whose power of concentration was total, and he just was totally relaxed. He didn't have to strain to pull all the things together. Where there's strain, there's doubt. Where there's strain, there's tension. Where there's tension, there's a distraction of energy. He was just able to totally be wherever he was without any effort at all. Well, that's the state of concentration, the level of consciousness that we want to arrive at if we are to achieve true concentration. Learn to be centered in yourself. Learn to ask God to flow through you. Learn to listen in your mind for some kind of guidance. And you don't have to do it in all the weird ways that people cook up to get in tune with divine guidance. Oh, I feel it's coming. It's coming. Oh, I feel... Yes, I have it. That kind of thing. No, it doesn't have to be like that. I found that it can come quite simply if you come on, God. Come get with it. And suddenly there it is. Loving demands is what Master used to talk about. A very interesting word. When we think of demands, we often think of shouting, slogan shouting, and angry strikers, let's say, making demands to the company. And he didn't mean that kind of demand where you're demanding that God do something for you, but a loving demand is the way he put it. And it's because we just don't have the right word in the English language. I'm sure that in time, when enough people do this, the right word will come, or the right connotation will come so that people automatically understand what he meant. But it's just totally expecting that God will answer you. Why shouldn't he? He's your own. And asking him with absolute force, I need an answer, come on, right now. And absolute faith and complete love, where you're not presuming on him, you know it's really up to him. But if you want to, it's such a delicate balance of many different thoughts, many different attitudes, but all put together in lots of willpower, lots of faith, lots of love, and wanting it, expecting it that he will do it. Why shouldn't he do it? And yet knowing that if he doesn't want to, well, after all, it doesn't matter. It's still his will. It's such a delicate balance that it probably takes many years to achieve that. In a way that really works. But once you've got it, it does work. It's amazing how well it works. And with that kind of openness, with that kind of expectation, I've often said that the conscious mind is problem-oriented, the superconscious mind is solution-oriented. That when you expect an answer, when you're solution-oriented and the answer is, and you just sort of go at it with that total confidence that it will come, that the superconscious then is able to come into the picture and give you the answer. That the superconscious is solution-oriented, and being solution-oriented puts you in tune with the superconsciousness. That when you say yes to life, when you say yes, I know I can get an answer, as long as it can be received from above and not in a boastful way, that will give you success. Success means essentially being more and more in tune with that higher self. And this is true for material success and spiritual success. Concentration is the beginning. Then you add to that what you're concentrating, and not only your mind, but your feelings, your expectations, your love, everything. It's the heart enters into it too. When all your energies, as Jesus said, thou shalt love the Lord thy God with all thy mind, with all thy heart, with all thy soul, and with all thy strength. When all your energy and your whole being is going in that direction, then you are really concentrated. And so we speak of concentration first in terms of thoughts and taking one's mind away from all objects of distraction and placing them on one thing at a time to the exclusion of anything else. But in the deeper sense, our mind must be understood in the total aspect of consciousness, which isn't only your thoughts, but your feeling, but your memories, but your whole being, your whole character, everything. And so, we come to another very important dimension of what it takes to succeed in anything, and that is energy. that when you can direct energy toward anything, that is what brings about success. Concentration acting upon energy, or as Master put it, and it's really basically the same teaching, the greater the will, the greater the flow of energy. Will and concentration are the same thing in a sense. It would be very hard to divide them, although we apply them in different contexts. But will means concentrated mental force, all directed toward one thing. And so you direct that will toward the flow of energy, and if you direct a great deal of will to it, there's really no limit to the amount of energy that you can awaken. I was amused and pleased also the other day. We were in my swimming pool, and I was on Danny's shoulders, and Bharat was on somebody else's, I forget who, and we were having this sort of tussle to see who could throw the other into the water. And when Bharat came at me, I could see he was so concentrated and just determined to win. And I was pleased. That's right. That's the way we should do things. Concentration is going to direct your energy. And when your energy is absolutely flowing strongly, what it does is generate a magnetic field that will draw to itself what you need to succeed. Concentration must be understood in terms also of concentrating the flow of energy. And you direct that flow of energy towards something, and that energy, more than anything else, is what really dissolves the obstacles. In Aikido, there is a technique born of judo and karate and so on, but it's much more subtle and much more sensitive than those two, because its whole principle is based on the flow of energy. And that if you can direct that flow of energy strongly enough, there are actual photographs that I've seen of people being thrown who weren't even touched. That they've sent that energy so strongly and with such complete willpower and concentration that they were thrown just by the energy. That degree of energy is something very, very tangible. You feel it in people. You feel the energy that comes out of them. You feel the lack of it, which is the usual case. But when they when they have real energy, it has an almost tangible impact upon you. We read about people in history and we wonder, how did they ever have such an impact? But the people who were there knew. Gandhi would just walk into a room of squabbling politicians and instantly there would be harmony. He just had that magnetism that made people in his presence want to do the right thing. And Hitler had tremendous magnetism. It was of a negative type of magnetism, but nevertheless it was very powerful, so that he would just walk into a crowded room of people and instantly there would be silence. And people who heard him speak testified to the tremendous magnetism that he exerted. That was why people followed him. Unfortunately, they didn't discriminate. And there were many good things that he wanted to do, but he fell into the usual delusion of power, which is that power usually corrupts. Absolute power tends to corrupt absolutely. And so that concentration is something that you have to feel it. You have to be in its presence to be aware of it. But when you're aware of that presence, I know that being with Master, I would feel uplifted in his presence, even if he wasn't talking about spiritual things. He might be talking about some job that had to be done. But I would feel uplifted, even not looking at him, just because that magnetism was so strong. I know when I was in India and I was about to leave Ananda Mohima, and I felt her magnetism so overwhelmingly that I couldn't tear myself away. And she said goodbye several times, and I finally said, "Well, I can't leave as long as you're standing there." And she smiled understandingly and then went to her room, and then I was able to go. But there was such a power there of love and compassion and sweetness that it was just overwhelming. Well, that magnetism is something that is a real force, and you can feel it in yourself. You can feel that power going out. There have been times in my life when I have just sent an energy out to have something, make something happen, and it happened. But I could feel that energy going out. Master was talking about how Dr. Lewis had asked him to heal somebody in Chicago in the hospital. And Master sat down to pray, and he felt this power, this bolt of energy going out of him. And at that same moment in the hospital room, the nurse testified later that she had heard something like an explosion, and the whole room was suddenly filled with a flash of light. And a moment later, this man who was on his deathbed sat up well, cured. Well, that kind of power is something that is real. And that is what really works. You don't know how. You don't know the way in which it will operate. Because the ways of matter, it looks as if it always takes this much energy, this much power to make that sort of thing happen. But behind the scenes, it works in a very different way. And you don't have to think of all the exact rules for it all to come out right. You don't have to know them all. A person who is a natural-born talent, has a natural-born talent at something, doesn't have to learn the rules to be able to do it well. The rules might still help him, but not necessarily. When you tune in to that inner flow, then somehow it all works well. And when you put out that kind of energy, then you will find that somehow the right person will be there. You couldn't guarantee it. You might not even know who that right person was. And even if you'd known, you might have found it very hard to get his telephone number and make sure he was there at the right moment, and all the various concatenation of events that would make such and such a thing come to pass is beyond very often the power of man. And yet somehow, when the energy is put out in the right way, these things come together. You will find that successful people don't even know why they're being successful, don't even know what they've done to make a thing work. I had a funny thing happen with me in college, and it's actually happened quite a few times since then, but I don't know if I should be letting on, that I'll tell a joke that everybody will laugh at, and I'll get the point later. Maybe I have a good humor karma, and so without even knowing, it just sort of comes out that way. And then I'll later realize, no, that was pretty good. I've got to remember that one. You'll find that you don't know how you do it. If your concentration is in a certain way, it happens anyway. Success will happen this way too. That you try to do the right things, but the most important thing of all is that you put out the right kind of energy, and somehow you'll buy the right stocks at the right moment, if that's your karma, or you'll invest in the right thing, or without knowing for sure. Many successful people have spoken about how they weren't quite sure why or how they knew, but they did know when to do a thing and how to do it. I've told you about that friend of mine who was he was Jewish, but his business was a Christmas card factory, and he was very successful. He would listen to all the advice of his artists as to which cards were best and so on for this year. But he said he always knew inwardly himself, and he always went by that feeling. And he was always right. Sometimes theirs would work, sometimes they wouldn't work. But his always did work. He knew. And so it is that you'll hear this from many, many successful people in life, that they don't quite know why they've made this choice or that statement or done this or gone there. But somehow they did it. They felt it. And then later on it became clear why they did it. We are the pawns of karma, in a sense, but we are also the instruments of whatever flow of intuition we've set into motion. And without knowing even, we manage to go along with that flow and achieve success, if that's the direction that we're working in. So then we have two things that are very important here. One is concentration, and the other is energy. And if I would add to that this principle of faith that I've really been talking about too, that's important. But that faith comes anyway as you exercise these principles and find them working. And the more you make them work, the more they come into focus, and you can't doubt it anymore, because your experience is too frequent, too consistent. So When you send the energy out with willpower, the greater the will, the greater the flow of energy toward whatever it is that you're trying to do, what I found is, and this is something I said the other day to you, that it isn't so important to concentrate on the thing that you're trying to do. If the energy flow is right, that thing will take care of itself. It's a lower level of manifestation to be thinking and visualizing the object or the particular goal that you're trying to achieve. It helps, it's not bad. But if you get into the energy flow, in fact what happens here is that it's a more total thing. I've seen, for example, that with a great concentration on some goal that I have in mind. I know years ago, when I was, my allowance in the monastery in SRF was $15 a month. And later it was increased to $20 a month, and that's all I ever got. And I decided that I wanted a 9-stone bangle with diamond and emerald and ruby and all these things that cost a certain amount. I didn't know how much, but all I knew was that I definitely wanted to get it. And so I studied all sorts of encyclopedias to try to find out where these stones originated, where I could get them most cheaply, and wrote to people in those countries and people who were members of SRF and asked them if maybe they could help me to get something there. And I just put a lot of concentration and a lot of willpower into getting this bangle. I finally got the bangle. I did. It all worked fine. I inherited some money, and somebody sent me one or two stones. And anyway, it just happened. And it was something of a manifestation. And then I had the thing, and I don't think it ever did me any good at all. And all that energy wasted, as far as I could tell. Maybe it wasn't just the right one. Later on, I was given another one. I sold that one to help pay for the retreat, and then Divine Mother gave me another one, and that I can feel power from. But this first one, I couldn't. I've seen several times in my life that I've been able, by a lot of energy and a lot of willpower and a lot of concentration, to manifest things. But if my whole thought was just the thing that I was trying to manifest, it wasn't always within the framework of the balanced and total picture that I needed. In other words, I got it, but it wasn't what I wanted. It wasn't what I needed. It wasn't what I really wanted, I should say. It made me unbalanced in the process of being so strongly seeking that. It would have been far better to just say, well, Divine Mother, if you want me to have it, fine, and if you don't, fine. And she'd have done it for me. In fact, it was almost like a kind of doubt, if you want to put it that way. Why didn't I ask her? Why did I feel that I had to do it all myself? What you'll find is that if you can get into that flow of energy and simply allow it to carry you, that you'll have success. It'll usually be a much bigger success, and it'll be that which is right for you, as opposed to all the things that people get and then wish they hadn't gotten. So to put your energy out, but concentrate on the flow and quality of the energy, and above all, concentrate on that thought of God, you do it if you want to, so that you give, remember what it says in the Bhagavad Gita, to give the fruits of your action to God. So I will put out this energy, I will put out this concentration, but if you will, it's your fruits, it's your project. That's how I felt the second time around on that bangle, and it worked fine. That if God wants it, good. You will find this again and again in your life, that if you give it to Him, then the success you have will be right and beautiful for you. Above all, what it will do for you is much more important than the things it will give you. It will change you as a person. Don't think that success is not important. Success is vitally important in life. It's something every one of us should strive for. We merely need to understand what it is that we mean by success. We must put energy out. This idea of trying to simply be, and as that person said, she sits there and just is, that's not being successful. A person who really is. I remember there was this one couple that I knew slightly indirectly. They were friends of a friend, but I got to meet them. And it was really a very lovely example of the man was a man who was very dedicated to doing certain things, very wise, very capable. And the wife was one who was very, very warm and very loving. And each of them was inspiring in his own way. It was it was inspiring to be around them. In the last analysis, I would say she was more inspiring than he was, because she gave you something, whereas he had merely done something that impressed you. When you concentrate on being, then that means radiating love and warmth to others, radiating the divine energy, being a channel for that, not passively. To be really successful at that means to be so open to the divine that it just flows through you all the time. This is what Anandamoyi Ma was like. This is what great saints are like. And this is why women tend to be more naturally religious and spiritual than men are, because they understand that principle more easily. It's very important to get into that flow where you understand that you can touch people much more by who you are than by what you do. The real success in your life will then be determined by how open you are to the divine flow. Ultimately, you don't have to do anything at all, and anybody who comes into your presence will feel it. But when you're not doing anything, you're still radiating that beingness. You're still radiating those vibrations. The greatest work you can do for people is to try to bless them. There are some people whose very presence is a blessing. If you can feel that what you're putting out to them is you're trying to touch their souls. It isn't that you have to say the right thing. You're trying to touch their souls. That marvelous story of Narayan Swami, who was giving all the wrong advice to this man because he knew that the man was not open to the right kind of advice. And so he was trying to make the man open to his vibrations. And so he was talking to him in a way that you wouldn't expect a saint ever to talk, because he was just trying to reach the man's consciousness. But that man was completely changed once his consciousness had been touched. Completely changed, because he had felt those vibrations, and the vibrations, not the words, were what were really doing the act. So when you are with people, try above all to give them your vibrations. Try to share with them not just your thoughts and ideas, but share with them who you are in a room. Try to expand your aura to fill the whole company, so that everybody is somehow touched by whatever is flowing through you. You'll find that people will feel it in time. They'll know that there's something there, something that you have that they want. That's much more important, a much more important kind of success than being written up in some magazine for all the wonderful things you've done. Remember that success means ultimately merging your soul into God. So success then means also to realize that there's a limit to how much one body can do. If you're going to be concentrated, remember that you have to make a choice. You may wish you could do lots of things, but you've got to take your choice and say, well, this is what I will do. And once you've decided to do that, then you will have all sorts of other people telling you, oh, why aren't you more broad-minded? But you're doing something and they aren't. It's very easy, for example, on the spiritual path, for people who aren't yet on it to say, oh, well, you don't want to be fanatical. After all, I'm broad-minded. I embrace all paths. That's because they're not following any of them. Anybody who's at the foot of a mountain can see all these people struggling, each one up the mountain in his own particular way, and see the struggle and strain of each one of them, and feel perhaps superior to them. Ha, well, I'm not having a hard time. And I can see the mountain, you guys can't, you know. But once you get onto the mountain and have to start climbing, you have to take one route, you can't take many. And it's going to take a lot of concentration. Sometimes I see people who are fanatical in their religion, and I think, well, probably at this stage of their evolution, they need to be fanatical, because if they weren't, they'd fall from what they're doing altogether. It's all right for a time. You know, when you're new at something, you have that tendency to think that it's the only thing in the world. A reformed alcoholic is out trying to convert everybody else, and you'd think that the whole world revolved around whether you're an alcoholic or not. But if he didn't do that, he'd slip very quickly. He's got to make that his whole thing for a while. And once he's gotten comfortable with it, then he can relax and say, well, after all, there are other things in life besides overcoming alcoholism, or besides whether you drink or don't drink. Similarly, with the spiritual path, you will in the beginning, and it's a good thing in the beginning to be very one-pointed. But gradually, as you get into what you're doing, relax about it and see other ways and accept that there are other ways. But still remember, loyalty, dedication to your practices, to your particular directions, this is necessary, otherwise you won't succeed. And you're not being broad-minded if you merely hop from one thing to another. As I read somewhere once, don't be so open-minded that your brains fall out. There has to be this real dedication. Sometimes I've met people who were great people, and it sort of distressed me in a way that they should be narrow-minded. For example, they might be great Christians. Richard Wurmbrand's an example. He's a great man, but he was not able to cope with the idea that we were Hindus, or, well, we aren't Hindus, we're Christians too, but we've included in our Christianity the Hindu philosophy and yoga and so on, and he simply couldn't cope with it. He saw that the people here were lovely people and so on, but it was just too much for him. Because in his dedication to Christ, it's been a dedication to God as opposed to mammon. And he's defined God in Christian terms. And he'd have to break that definition to come to anything else. Well, I don't mind at all, because I see that this man is concentrated in his faith. And he's far ahead of those people who are broad-minded because they aren't concentrated. Because the water that they could have here in one container is just sort of spread out all over the ice. When you see somebody who's really strong in what he's doing, he may seem fanatical, but that will be a strength, not a weakness. It will be a further strength if, after having become that one point, he's able to accept all. But you must do that bit by bit. You can't do it all at once, or you end up being totally defused, unfocused, and incapable of succeeding. Still, as you go on in your success, to be able to incorporate into your acceptance the things that you can accept, opposing views, different attitudes, and so on, to be able to have a very, very broad outlook is very good if it doesn't distract you from what you're trying to accomplish. It's very good to be able to see other people's points of view. It's very good to be able to include many different ways of doing things and go along with them too, so long as it doesn't weaken you. But if in keeping your directions you can include those, then it will strengthen you. It's a very, it's not a sign of weakness, for example, in a leader to give in gracefully to some other point of view, if in giving in he doesn't surrender the reins of leadership. Many people would be afraid to do that because they'd be afraid of relinquishing their role. And after all, if you are a leader of something, then it's your job to be in that position and not say, well, gee, I can't do it, you do it. And somebody who thinks like that is not fit to be a leader. But if he can incorporate and allow other people to do things in their way and not allow his position to be threatened, then in fact that strengthens him because he's getting a broader base. He's still keeping his direction and adding to it one more dimension and another dimension. And so gradually, with that, there comes a great deal of strength to be able to handle all of those things. It's like a conductor being able to be aware of all those different instruments and yet still produce a symphony. He's not getting distracted from the violins because of allowing the trombone to come out a little bit more loudly. He's still aware of the violins, and at the right moment he'll make the trombones go soft and the violins become loud. Then he's there orchestrating the whole thing. To be able to spread your mind out over that kind of territory of your influence is beneficial, and I would say is a further definition of success. That in your concentration and in your goal orientation, the more you can expand your consciousness to include all aspects of your life, so that you can bring that success into those aspects to influence them, so that you can bring those into whatever it is you've been doing to succeed and influence that, and make it all a part of a balanced whole, then you will have the truest success of all. I think the greatest way to accomplish that is to understand that you don't have to do it anyway. It's really not a problem. If you keep in tune with God and allow all of these things to be included as a part of that attunement, so that you're not thinking, oh, this and oh, that, and sort of getting more and more tense as you're controlling it all. You're just absorbing it all into your overall sense of God's will. And you'll find then that there's an effortless flow to it that does not distract and doesn't create tension at all in your mind. To be able to accomplish this, ultimately, it's one way to cosmic consciousness, I suppose, because it expands your consciousness gradually, to include sympathy for all, to be able to see all points of view and recognize them as a part of your own self, and to feel for them, and then through that feeling to be able to help them and bless them. Ultimately, success means to expand beyond your little ego and realize yourself to be one with the infinite. The laws of this success are essentially the same, whether material or spiritual. The way to achieve that success is merely on a higher octave when you apply it to God. But the way to achieve true success in the worldly way isn't any different from the way to achieve true success in the spiritual way. Okay, thank you all.